Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Just another Tuesday night in sports. Just another Tuesday night in October. Welcome to the party, NBA. Pair of games to tip off the 2019-20 season. And there was bling in both Toronto, where we had rings and banner raisings and an incredible atmosphere. And then in Los Angeles, where both the Clippers and Lakers are chasing this year's bling. But there's a lot of star power inside Staples Center. So we'll get to the opener of the NBA season, the first two games. It's actually being billed as opening week. And so there are many more games to come for sure. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We start with the World Series, though, because game one is in the books. If anybody ever tries to tell you it's not a game of inches, well, you've got plenty of evidence from the opener of the World Series. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. They found a better way to mortgage so you can focus on making your new house a home. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. I may have to temper my expectations and my hopes and dreams for a pitcher's duel. Potentially, we will get one in game two. A girl can dream. You're saying there's a chance that Justin Verlander and Steven Strasburg might give us a pitcher's duel. But we did not get a pitcher's duel with Gerrit Cole and Max Scherzer. In fact, each of those pitchers, those two incredible starting pitchers, only offered up one perfect inning. So Max Scherzer had a perfect 1-2-3 inning in the fifth, which was his last on the mound because he had already thrown 112 pitches. Gerrit Cole didn't have a 1-2-3 until the seventh. So this was the exact opposite of a pitcher's duel. It did have plenty of drama, though. Oh, and it had a slow burn to it as well. I mean, I feel like I'm with Rob Manfred. If the games were 3 hours and 10 minutes, just on a weeknight, it's a long time to be sitting there in front of your TV and watching a baseball game. It is the World Series, and there's two incredible stories here, two franchises who are coming from opposite directions. But as I was watching the game, and it seemed as though it was very slow moving, I thought, wowzers. I wonder how many people out there are watching this puppy from start to finish. Not moving. This is compelling stuff. They're in it for the long haul. But that's what Major League Baseball has turned into. And certainly when your starting pitchers aren't able to rack up 1-2-3 perfect innings, well, then it adds minutes and it adds hours to the game. So Gerrit Cole did get a lead. He got a lead early on. He actually had to erase a runner in scoring position, but then in the bottom of the first, Yuli Gurriel had a double off the center field wall to drive in two runs for the Astros, and Cole had his lead. 2-0 Houston after the first inning. But it wasn't long before the Nationals and their aggressive approach got to Gerrit Cole. And this was something that was really notable. There was no hesitation. There was no sign of a layoff. It didn't seem like their timing, their rhythm was off. No, it seemed like they were picking up exactly where they left off against the Cardinals in the NLCS. I mean, they came in raring to go, you know, guns a-blazing. I feel like maybe I shouldn't be using that analogy anymore, but you get my point. They were extremely aggressive, and they were going after Gerrit Cole.
Here's the wind of the pitch. Swing and a drive hit well. Deep center field. Way back goes Springer to the warning track. Looking up, and it is gone. Goodbye. Bang. Zoom goes the Z-Man to the deepest part of Minute Maid Park. Just to the left of the batter's eye in center field.
The 1-0. Swing and a fly ball well hit to left field. Way back goes this one. It's got a chance. It's going, going, and long gone up onto the railroad tracks. Welcome to the World Series, Juan Soto. Nationals tie the game at two as Juan Soto goes opposite field for a tape measure home run.
And that tied the game, the calls on the Nationals radio network. All kinds of nerd alerts out there regarding Juan Soto, who will turn 21 on Friday. But since he's 20, he's the fourth youngest ever to homer in a World Series. And we would hear his name a lot moving forward. I really thought it was interesting, too. Even though the Nationals tied the game with a pair of home runs, it was the small ball, manufacturing runs in the fifth inning when they really put the pressure on Gerrit Cole. So there was a walk. Then there was a hit. Then Adam Eaton had a break. That wasn't going to come out right. He had a broken bat RBI single. Then there's a ground out that moves the runners up. I mean, these were not hard hit balls. This was station to station, which stands out because we don't get that so much anymore. However, Juan Soto came up and blasted a ball, so, you know, that kind of changed things again.
3-2 to Soto. Swung on, hit in the inner left field. Brantley going back against the Crawford boxes off the wall, bounces by him back toward the infield. Robles has scored. Rounding third is Rendon. He comes in to score on a booming double off the left field wall by Juan Soto.
Three hits and a stolen base for Juan Soto in his World Series debut. Now, it was also the World Series debut for a whole bunch of the Nationals who are not 20 years old, but pretty incredible what this young man has done on the major league stage and is not intimidated by the moment. However, he admitted he was nervous. His legs were shaking in that first at bat. So, yes, the jitters, the nerves, the adrenaline rush, all of that, it's impossible to ignore. No matter your age, no matter your moxie, no matter your confidence, maybe your cockiness, no matter how old you are. I mean, the magnitude of this moment, this stage, it impacts guys. And to see Juan Soto perform despite those shaky legs, those knocking knees, well, that was really impressive. So he was definitely a catalyst on the base paths. George Springer nearly brought the Astros all the way back. He had a home run in the seventh inning and then barely missed a home run, maybe a foot and a half in the eighth inning. Instead, it was an RBI double, but it left the Astros short at home. And so the Nationals grab that home field advantage. Pretty amazing to think about what they've done. Now, 17 wins in their last 19 games, including multiple elimination games. They have stared all this pressure in the face, and they figured out a way to extend it over the course of a week off. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. I said it earlier, I will say it again, my favorite moment, absolutely Ryan Zimmerman in his World Series debut, smashing a home run.
I'll be honest with you, my eyes got a little watery for him. I mean, he waited a long time, you know, to be in this position, and for him to hit that first home run and put us on the board was awesome.
Definitely was. Davey Martinez echoing my sentiments, to be sure. As for Max Scherzer, you heard the word grind from him a lot. He went through five innings at 112 pitches. He didn't go deep, but the bullpen picked him up. The bullpen allowed a couple of runs on five hits and a couple of walks, but managed to hold. There was a whole lot of holding going on there for that Astros bullpen. And Houston did leave the bases loaded in the seventh inning as well against the pen. So there were opportunities, but the Nationals pen didn't break. So maybe a couple of chinks, if there were, that full body armor, a couple of dings in the armor, but not enough to get all the way through and come back and tie the game. As for Scherzer, he had the two runs on five hits. He did walk three, had seven strikeouts. And afterwards, as I mentioned, he was using that G word.
I got to tip my hat to him. I mean, they grinded me apart. You know, for me, I never felt like I was able to get into the rhythm. You know, first batter game is a walk, and now Altuve hits a single, and it's first and second, nobody out. And just having to absolutely grind through the lineup over and over and just continue to have to make big pitches and just find a way to get out of these innings when there's runners on base.
11 runners left on base in total by the Houston Astros, 3 for 12 with runners in scoring position. And we've seen stretches where the Astros haven't come through in big moments. Now, they came through just enough against the New York Yankees, and that was kind of a theme for New York in the ALCS, is how many runners were left on base after that 7-0 win in the first game of the championship series. But the Astros themselves have had plenty of moments in this postseason in which they have not come through with a big hit. And certainly the stunner of the night is Gerrit Cole losing. I mean, that's the part that we haven't seen in, what, 5 months? He hadn't lost since May 22nd. And even though he did go through 7 innings, he was responsible for all 5 runs on 8 hits. Had a half dozen strikeouts in there. But even going back to his last start against New York, remember he left the bases loaded in the first inning of that last start. He got better as he went along. Not that different from what we saw on Tuesday night. But it's been a long season. And while he hadn't lost those games and he'd been able to work his way out of jams previously, this was one where the Nationals, the hot hitting, the aggressive approach, finally broke through and got to him. So the first loss for Gerrit Cole since May 22nd. Now, George Springer, he came through with a couple of big hits, but the rest of the Astros lineup certainly has to take some responsibility.
He's one of the best, hitters in the world. To get a 112 or 113 pitch count after 5 or 6, I mean, I think we did okay. I think he did a great job of kind of, you know, just limiting runs.
They're a very good team. They have great pitching. Their offense is really good. They're a complete ball club, and we have to play better if we want to win.
When do you ever hear Alex Bregman that subdued? You don't really. He's really high energy. And so I had to listen back to that. Is that really Alex Bregman? So yeah, George Springer, Bregman, to a man, the Astros talking about how tough Scherzer is. And he brings so much experience. Obviously a great pitcher. We know all about his resume and his legacy, if we can even use that word before he's done. A little bit odd. But he's got World Series experience. He is a bulldog, and he lives for those moments where he grinds through. As for Gerrit Cole's new experience, he hasn't been on the losing end in months.
Kind of pigeonholed myself either into a fastball count or have to execute another one and either fail to execute another one or for example, like Zimmerman left a fastball over the plate. When you're not executing, they're obviously really good. So they made us pay.
There was a lot of good with Gerrit. I think, he came into the game very well and then lost a couple of key 2-strike battles. You know, I thought the Zimmerman pitch was a mistake, and Zimmerman made him pay with a homer. I think the Soto, he never really controlled Soto.
No, Soto got the best of that matchup with Gerrit Cole. Again, 3 hits and a stolen base for the 20-year-old. Meanwhile, the Nationals have taken away the home field advantage, which is critical. What's always the goal? I mean, sure, you'd love to be able to win both games, and the Nats will try in game number 2 coming up on Wednesday. But if you can escape and head back to your own park with the home field advantage in your pocket, your back pocket, your front pocket, whichever pocket. I mean, that's always the goal, to flip the script a little bit. And the Nationals have done that, and they are incredibly hot right now. The week off did not affect them in the least. So Steven Strasburg, Justin Verlander starting tonight. I'm still hoping for a pitcher's duel, baby. 2.5 hours. Okay, fine. 3.5 hours even. Is that too much to ask? 855-212-4227. That's our toll-free line. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Also on our Facebook page. I think our Touchdown Tuesday poll is still live. Actually, we posted it late in our last show. Coming up, though, the NBA took some of the spotlight away from the World Series. They had to share on Tuesday night the bling of opening night for the association. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Powell back. spins away from Holiday, into the lane, kicks out. Siakam, wide open look. Three ball! Bucket! From the far sideline, he buries it from distance, and the Raptors have a one-point lead. Lowry, over the shoulder pass to Gasol, to the sideline, to Van Fleet for three. Those onions have been big tonight as Van Fleet buries his fifth triple of the game. From the east side, it goes down, and the Raptors have opened up a five-point lead. Raptors across center. Lowry's got the ball on the big logo. Everybody's standing here at Scotiabank
guess
Arena.
Guess what's coming.
Lowry, far wing, elevates. Triple bucket. West side three for Kyle Lowry. Matches Toronto's largest lead of the night.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The champs are here. And in case you're feeling sorry for the Raptors because Kawhi Leonard ditched them and went to Los Angeles, don't. They're not feeling sorry for themselves. Oh, no, they've got some fancy rings and a banner hanging in the Raptors where they get to see it on a regular basis. If you have not seen the rings, they are enormous. J-Lo, eat your heart out. Producer Chris just put up a video on our show Twitter, After Hours CBS, actually a couple of videos in which you can see the rings. And I'm telling you, this is not something that you can prepare yourself for. It's enormous. It's huge. It's real and it's spectacular. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Eric Smith with the calls. Overtime for the Raptors. But as I say, no need to pity them because Kawhi Leonard is no longer a member of the team. Fred VanVleet, a career-high 34 points. Pascal Siakam fouled out with 34 points and 18 rebounds. And both guys talking about the incredible energy in the arena after they started playing.
It was a lot better than what I expected. I went into it with an open mind. I wasn't really sure what to expect. I thought it would kind of be anticlimactic to some sense or kind of dull us out for the game, but it was quite the opposite. You know, really got the emotions going again. You know, watching it, being in the arena, and feeling that energy was amazing.
It was crazy. It was crazy. Just a lot of emotions going on and just seeing what we accomplished. And I'm just happy that the fans were all together. We were, you know, one last celebration. And you know, it's definitely something that we never forget.
The bling is the thing. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. 855-212-4227. That's our toll-free line brought to you by Geico. With a quick way you can save money, switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on your car insurance. Of course, no Zion Williamson. In fact, we might not see him for a couple of months, so that would put him on track to return to the Pelicans around Christmas time. Don't you dare make this about Zion being out of shape. That is the message from David Griffin, the general manager. He is staunchly defending the top overall draft pick.
I've seen a lot of the narrative out there about him that this happened because he's not in shape and he's too big. That kid's a freak of nature. When he went through his physical, he ran on the treadmill longer than the cardio stress test people have ever needed to put anybody through a test to get his heart rate up. That happens because he's touched by the hand of God to do this. He's in elite condition, and he stays in elite condition.
Yeah, it's quite a leap to make from torn meniscus to the kid, quote unquote, must be out of shape and this must be his own doing. Gosh, sometimes even when there is no controversy, people have to create it or have to dig for something in between the lines when it's pretty cut and dried. It's a knee injury. It happens to a lot of professional athletes. So we won't see Zion Williamson. We did not see Paul George in action for the Clippers against the Lakers at Staples Center. That was the second game of the opening night doubleheader. But man, there was plenty of star power in this one. And you can tell that this this narrative, this Los Angeles rivalry, these two teams going back and forth, this is going to be a focus. I mean, just the attention, the social media traffic, the way that these players are enjoying it. I mean, it's not the postseason. It's game number one. But, man, it had a lot of electricity inside Staples Center.
LeBron dribbles right down Main Street, got to the rim and laid it in beautifully. A reverse layup by LeBron James gives him 18 in the game, and the Lakers trail by 5.
Leonard on the right wing, guarded by James, attacks down the right alley, pump fake in the lane, turnaround jumper from 8 feet is good on the right block. Kawhi Leonard stuck on automatic with 28 points. 106-96, Clippers in front.
LeBron with it on the right wing, kick it to Danny Green. Green's been great, three-pointer by Green. Good again!
Oh, wow.
He got a high bounce. Danny Green is the leading scorer in the game with 28 points. Now here's a foul and a bucket for Montrezl Harrell, and that could do it. The foul's on Danny Green. It puts the Clippers up 10, and Harrell can make it 11.
You know what my favorite part of this game was? The eyes of Patrick Beverley were already extremely intense. We don't often get those crazy Patrick Beverley eyes. And by crazy, I just mean they will bore a hole in your head. Ooh, like the eyes of Adam Gase. We don't get that intensity from Patrick Beverley generally until we get into a little bit later in the season, a postseason game. That's where I always look for them. But man, you'll never win a staring contest with the eyes of Adam Gase or with the eyes of Patrick Beverley. He was already in mid-season form. Chris, if you could find the video, it's out there, it's all over the place. I meant to tell you earlier, the video of him attempting to beat Anthony Davis at a jump ball, he jumps early and ends up essentially doing a body, wait, what's that called? When you do like a chest bump, oh, chest bump, thank you, sorry. I'm so not cool. Anyway, he ended up doing a chest bump with a stationary Anthony Davis, which was just hysterical. So Beverley was locked in. And of course, it's so fitting that it turns out to be Danny Green who's making the major impact with the Lakers. Danny Green on opening night, who has 28 points, more than AD, more than LeBron. But Kawhi Leonard with the 30 to cover the absence of Paul George. And here's something else that stood out to me about the Clippers. Every player they brought in off the bench was in double figures. So only Kawhi from the starting lineup. But Montrezl Harrell played 38 minutes. Mo Harkless played 29 minutes. Lou Williams out there for 37 minutes. And so the depth of the Clippers could be something that stands out. And it's still weird, though. It's still weird to see Kawhi in a Clippers uniform.
It was great. You know, a lot of emotions game one. But I'm just happy we came out and got a victory. We played a great practice the last week. Everybody competing, pushing everybody's limits, and we had some carryover tonight.
Patrick Beverley was ready. Don't you worry. Yeah, please check it out on our show Twitter, After Hours CBS. He tries to win a jump ball against Anthony Davis, and he gets a little bit too eager. I love this guy. He will fight you. Andrew Bogut, he will fight you with the drop of a hat.
Will he?
He will.
That seems dangerous.
I love that intensity from him when he's locked in, man. All right, you can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, but really the fun stuff is on our show Twitter. As I said, I'm totally not cool. After Hours CBS, also on our Facebook page.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Listening to After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Firing for the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Touchdown!
Takes it himself to the pylon. Touchdown!
One man to beat 10. He's gone!
They throw in the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Made a guy miss. He's inside the five. He's to the 3-2-1. Touchdown!
Southern Salting into the end zone. Touchdown!
The people have spoken, and one score stands above the rest. Here is your TD of the week. The Buffalo Bills.
Farwell, Bills special teams coordinator, has his hands team out there. The Dolphins trying to recover. Here's the bloop kickoff, the short one, and it is caught by Micah Hyde in the air, and he's going to run the other
Go
way.
Go down.
Micah Hyde running at the
Go
10,
down.
At the
Go
5,
down.
Into the end zone, touchdown. Micah Hyde caught it in the air, ran it into the end zone for the touchdown.
I love the fact that Micah Hyde ignored the instructions from the broadcast booth on the Bills radio network. That was the all-hands team. Micah Hyde earning his keep and a spot on the all-hands team. And he ends up scoring a touchdown on that uber short kickoff, the attempt by the Dolphins to do the onside kick. It was an AFC East battle that wasn't iced until Micah Hyde got into the end zone. And that is your choice for TD of the week. Thanks for all your votes. We got a ton of them on Facebook. Lots of Bills fans apparently are following us on Facebook. But John Murphy and Eric Wood on the Bills radio network. Go down! Go down! Well, you got to say it louder, man. You got to say it louder. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. We always appreciate when you weigh in. By the way, not quite half of you said meh describes your attitude about the start of the NBA season. I get it. I understand it's a very long season, so you may not feel like you're missing something simply because you didn't turn in on the first night. But also, it's the World Series, and there's football, and there's a lot to keep track of. Oh, trust me, I know. However, the season did actually start last night, so even if you don't think it starts until Christmas, these games all count. So do the games coming up Sunday, week 8. Let that sink in. Week 8 in the NFL. We are approaching the midway point, and it's an NFL on CBS doubleheader starting with the Colts battling the Broncos or Kyler Murray's Cardinals taking on the Saints. It's followed by the Browns and Patriots going toe-to-toe in Foxborough. Let's hope they go toe-to-toe. It all begins with the NFL today, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, only on CBS. I did actually write my weekly football column yesterday afternoon, strangely enough, and he sent me a video to corroborate his story. The editor for our digital department, our website, had a fire in his backyard, and he was left without Wi-Fi access. I didn't say he had to go to a library to post my column or go to a Starbucks. So my column is not actually posted yet on the website, but it will be this morning, according to Tony and Promises. Anyway, I wrote along the same lines of what we talked about on Sunday night show, which was the coach of the year candidates and my cases for not just the front runners, in my opinion, but also the dark horses. And so I kind of went through a bunch of different candidates and I really enjoyed writing the column. I know it's early. Nobody hands out hardware in October for anything, a championship, an MVP, a coach of the year. But we've got some candidates who are definitely setting themselves apart with their leadership. And the fact that so many teams have gone through some early season adversity, I also think is worth noting. So that column will be posted within hours, and I will let you know if I'm not already sleeping. If I am, well, then you're going to have to find it on CBSSportsRadio.com. Please, please find it on CBSSportsRadio.com. 855-212-4227. That's how you can reach us up until the top of the hour. Bill Belichick never rests. Ever. Even though the Patriots are 7-0, he still goes out and trades for Mohamed Sanu of the Atlanta Falcons. Now, you may remember New England tried to trade for Sanu going back to the draft. They've been high on him. He came out with the Bengals, and then he ended up with the Falcons. And New England was trying to trade for him earlier in the year, but they've been high on him. I mean, we've had comments, and we know that they really like how he plays the position. And so finally, they were convinced by the Falcons to give up a second round pick. It's kind of unpatriots-like. They don't generally give up a second round pick. But they did, and they continue to have this transition and this adjustment, really a revolving door with their receiving core. You've still got, I mean, he's playing, but an injured Julian Edelman. Josh Gordon wasn't out there this week. Heavens, I know. It's hump show and my brain is tired, but it's no excuse, not making excuses. Get it together, Amy. So they've got, you know, the different auditions that they're doing every week for different tight ends. They bring Ben Watson back after cutting him. I mean, it literally is a revolving door. And so it speaks to the professionalism and the abilities of Tom Brady that he continues to distribute the ball to a lot of guys that he hasn't spent many practices with or had a whole lot of reps with. So Mohamed Sanu, LFG, I'll let you interpret that. All of you millennials out there, if you're older than that, if you're like my mom, well, then I'm not going to explain it. That was his post on social media, and Brady instantly responded. So he's in his eighth season, just over 300 yards and a touchdown this year. I can imagine that he's really psyched to be heading to a contender and a team that is still perfect. That's also the case with Emmanuel Sanders, who asked the Denver Broncos for a trade. The Denver Broncos complied, and he was sent packing for a couple of draft picks to the San Francisco 49ers yesterday, and he made some comments to CBS Denver on his way out the door.
It's hard, anytime you break up or you leave a place, it's tough. You know, we definitely had a great run out here in Denver. Had a lot of great times, but all good things come to an end. So I'm looking forward to getting out to San Fran and showcasing my talent and, meeting the guys and hopefully, adding my explosiveness and, my capabilities to our system and, trying to win.
He was already out the door, clearly, because you can hear the traffic in the background. but his point is, hey, we had a lot of good times here in Denver. It went well, but I want to try to win with San Francisco. And also, I like the breakup analogy there. It's always tough when you break up. And John Elway was rather pointed in his comments, too. He said that Emmanuel Sanders had his issues and we had our issues, and it's a good time to go in different directions. So two receivers changing hands, and Sanders has looked great coming off the Achilles. He's been explosive. He's been fast. He should be an asset for Jimmy Garoppolo and the Niners and their offense. And because Sanu is a professional and because of the guy who's throwing the ball, you would think he would make an impact with New England as well. A bit of a stunner, at least for those inside the Lions locker room, and second year in a row, right, that they've made a trade that has caught the locker room off guard. So last year it was Golden Tate going to Philadelphia. This year it's their starting safety and a versatile guy in Quandre Diggs. So the Lions up and trade him to the Seahawks. And if you haven't seen the reaction from the players on social media, well, it was pretty pointed. Even Kerryon Johnson, who was put on the IR yesterday because of his knee injury, he was actually commenting. And so I think this one was an unpopular move in the Lions locker room yet again. I'm not sure what it says. I'm not sure what it signals. I mean, they do have depth of the position, but this is a really young piece and a member of their starting secondary. So is this the Lions saying that they're playing for another day? They're living to fight another day? Just, man, you do too many of these and you wonder whether or not the locker room gets really disgruntled. And now they're professionals. They need to keep doing their jobs. It is a business. It's part of a business. But it's hard when this comes at you out of nowhere. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. Should we end with some humor? I think we should. Although I don't want it to sound like I'm laughing at Sam Darnold, because I'm really not. But the whole situation is backfiring in the face of NFL films. And the decision by a rep at MetLife on Monday night to air Sam Darnold's comment that I'm seeing ghosts is definitely creating backlash in the NFL community. So in case you're not familiar with the procedure, they ask if they can mic up various players. The players have the option of saying no. The teams have the option of saying no. But Sam Darnold agreed to it. The Jets agreed to it. And then as they're sifting through the audio, an NFL Films rep on site has to okay it or nix it. One or the other. Either yes, we'll air that, or no, we won't. But it has to go through an NFL Films rep. So it's not ESPN. It's not Monday Night Football. It's not the league, the NFL. It's NFL Films. This rep decided they were going to air the comment about seeing ghosts. And instantly, yes, it was compelling TV. It's a little bit surprising to hear, but it was also a moment that went viral. Well, the Jets are ticked off. And I remember I was listening to the broadcast on Westwood One after the fact, and Kurt Warner mentioned, oh yeah, there's going to be a long phone call from the New York Jets to the NFL front office saying, what the heck? Why did you air that? And so Adam Gase did a phone Well, he did a conference call. Don't make it more complicated than it is. He did a conference call, and you can tell that the Jets are really angry over this.
That was one of those things that was really disappointing to hear about after the game. I don't know if I've ever seen that where, you know, somebody that was mic'd up was basically, you know, a comment like that was allowed to be aired. It bothers me. It bothers the organization. I mean, obviously, we're going to be looking hard into you know, our cooperation going forward.
So Adam Gase goes on to say, I can't believe that they exposed our franchise quarterback like that. Can't believe that they okayed this comment, recognizing it's in a moment of frustration. It's in a moment of, obviously, confusion. But the worst game of his career, according to Le'Veon Bell. And so the Jets are angry. But because it's getting so much attention, there are others around the NFL who are talking about it, which is not good for business. So that's why higher up the food chain at NFL Films, they're angry at the rep who was on site at MetLife. That particular rep, I don't know if it was a male or female, I don't know who it was, that particular NFL Films employee okayed it without asking his boss, his or her bosses. And so now NFL Films is in an awkward situation. Because you've got guys like Aaron Rodgers telling Dan Patrick, well, this is why I don't want to wear a mic.
You know what? There's sometimes where you think it could be fun to look back down the line. I think Brett was mic'd up for the game where he passed Marino maybe in touchdowns. And that's some pretty cool audio. But yeah, I haven't been mic'd up for a while. I don't know. I just feel like it's a little invasive at times. And, you know, I think the ESPN one is a lot. I mean, they can play it quickly. There's a lot more freedom, I think, when it's films because they can go back and cut it. So it's not, you know, they're not watching in real time and then putting it up on the TV. I just think that's puts you in a tough spot.
So Aaron Rodgers telling the Dan Patrick Show that, you know, he hasn't been mic'd up in a while for reasons like this, because it's invasive and because in a live broadcast, it can be happening in real time, similar to what we went through with Sam Darnold. I thought Darnold handled it well after the game, and maybe I'm alone on my island in saying this. Certainly, it was the number one most talked about thing on Tuesday in the wake of Monday Night Football, that and his abysmal performance. But I appreciate that the Jets are coming to his defense. And I also think in Darnold's case, it makes him more relatable. I mean, it's embarrassing to be sure. And if he had a choice, he probably wouldn't want it out there for the entire world to hear and see. But don't we all have really crappy days at work? Now, ours aren't broadcast on national TV for millions of people to see and point and laugh at. But we all have really crappy days at work. Days when we do our job so poorly. And so I think it actually makes him a little more relatable. We can all identify with that kind of frustration and confusion, even if it's not about NFL blitzes coming directly at us. Aaron Rodgers also went on to tell Dan Patrick, because Dan asked him, has he ever seen ghosts on the football field? And Aaron said, not ghosts. But sometimes I fail to see the defensive player who's hiding. So he says, sometimes I throw right at him because there's an interception that looks like it's going directly to the defender because I just never saw him. So, yeah, I mean, it happens. It's part of the deal. It's part of the learning process. But even when you're the best of the best, sometimes the defense gets the best of you. But we'll do a lot more on football on our next show, plus game two of the World Series, Justin Verlander versus Steven Strasburg. That is mere hours away. I'll post that link to my column. You can always find us on Twitter or Facebook. I'm tired, so I'm going home to go to bed. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Boom!
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.